Labor Notes Conference in Chicago, April 4th through 6th, led by labor journalist, author, and organizer Steve Early.
Let me just say that this latest book tries to draw on some of the case studies of successful local union rebuilding, both in telephone, in the Teamsters, in machinists, and a number of other unions. You know, one of the things that Labor Notes, I think, has been best at staying the course at is this idea that, union democracy and reform struggles are still really central to the project of revitalizing the labor movement. Understandably, some people have felt and even, expressed the view that because we are so embattled, we're so encircled, we're so under siege, we really can't afford to have much debate and discussion, can't really have contested elections, it's too divisive, it weakens us. And Labor Notes consistently has, with its allies in major union reform movements, the Teamsters and other unions over the year, I think demonstrated that union structure does matter. It does affect union functioning and effectiveness. If the rank and file is not engaged and involved, if people are not building cross-union formations of the sort that Amy just described, if people are not networking, the groups like Jobs with Justice and Labor Notes, we're going to continue to lose ground. We're going to continue to suffer defeats, and we're not going to be able to go on the offensive in the way that we need to. You're in the Pacific Northwest. I'm sure people here follow very closely the terrible concession bargaining setbacks recently at Boeing. That's the downside of that story. The upside of that story is that we now have the first contested election for top officers in the International Association of Machinists in 50 years. Let's look at this picture very briefly. We could talk about it more. Maybe if there had been more contested elections in the International Association of Machinists at the international union level the last 50 years, the incumbent president, who's facing a challenger, Jay Kroc, Connecticut, who we recently fired from the international union staff, would have been a little more hesitant to wade into that debate among the Seattle machinists about whether or not to give back on pensions and other issues, siding with the company, siding with the local politicians, and basically securing in the second vote, by a narrow margin, membership approval of pretty devastating concessions. The kind of concessions that we should not be making to corporations like Verizon, like Boeing, like Kaiser, raking in billions of dollars in recent years, yet some of the strongest, so-called strongest unions in the labor movement are under pressure from their own international unions and from outside forces to make givebacks in these bargaining situations. The bad news is that the machinists, by a narrow margin at Boeing, gave back gains that they had struggled through many strikes, through many contract campaigns to win. The good news is that there is now a union-wide debate about the wisdom of that bargaining stance in Seattle. And you've got a reform slate doing the difficult work that Tom Leadham did in the Teamsters three times, Tom?
Yeah.
Running around the country. Stop. People who are rank and file members off the job, running for top offices in the union, making an issue of the executive jet that the president of the union has, his excessive salary, the nepotism, the whole pattern of dysfunction that tends to set in over half a century when you don't have a vibrant, healthy internal life within the union. So if you want to find out more about that struggle, Brother Jay Kroc, candidate for International President of the Machinists, will be in Chicago at the Labor Notes Conference, along with Kashana Sawant and many other notables from this region. Hope to see you there, and let's talk about any other issues in the Q&A. Thanks so much for coming.
Steve Early, labor journalist here at a Labor Notes fundraiser for the Labor Notes contingent.
We have two local troublemakers who are going to come up and kick off our discussion, putting this in a local context.
Elizabeth Teal from the Portland Association of Teachers.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Teal. I'm a teacher here in Portland. Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you the story sort of in the good news, bad news context that Steve just put it into. So bad news is, starting last April, our school district came into bargaining with teachers, pretty much set on busting our union. They had over 100 significant take-backs in the initial bargaining proposal, most of which were about increasing managerial rights and reducing teacher autonomy and our ability to do our job well. They also wanted to take away class size or workload limits, increase our workload, reduce our compensation. 100 take-backs, it's a lot of stuff. And they've had huge support from the Oregon Business Alliance. The Oregonian has been their mouthpiece, publishing editorial after editorial about how they're right and the teachers are wrong, and that's been a hard blow to teachers to hear that in the news. But the good news is that we're a union 2,900 strong, and all of this has only worked to activate and union members who have been quiet, who have been in their classrooms, are coming out, are speaking out, are finding their voice, coming together. We are extremely organized right now with a 1-to-10 ratio of organizers to members. And, you know, we're coming up to a strike date this Thursday. We voted last week with 98% approval rating to strike. And, you know, teachers are sensitive folks, and when we feel like the community doesn't believe in what we're doing, we crumble, because teachers came into this profession to stand up for kids and to do what's best for kids. And so it has been so valuable, the support that the community has given us. I mean, I think that's been the thing that's enabled teachers to keep on fighting. When we hear from the community, from parents, from the labor movement, that we're going in the right direction. And so I cannot express how thankful I am. I know a lot of you guys have been active in getting those voices up to the forefront. But, you know, teachers are asking for the ability to teach our kids well. We're asking for a reduced workload so we can get to know our kids and give them the education that they deserve. We're asking to maintain our status as professionals and not lose ground financially. We're asking for the autonomy to make decisions about what's right for our kids, not take our orders from the top from people that don't know our kids. And so we feel like the battle that we're in is a battle for labor, and it's a battle to do right by our community. And we're gonna win this battle. And so that's kind of the good news, I think, is with the support of the labor movement, I think we're on the verge of really, I think we already have garnered a huge amount of support in the community for understanding what the labor movement is about and being willing to get active in it. So. This contract is going to get settled eventually, and the organization that we've built in Portland in the last year is going to stick around, and I think it's exciting to see where it's going to go next. Yeah, thanks.
My name is Ryan. I'm a member of the IWW. I've been a food service worker now for the past 10 years or so. I was going to just take a couple minutes to share a little bit about my last year to hopefully inspire you a little bit. So in 2 weeks... Well, first off, how many folks in here have been fired for organizing before? I knew I was going to be in good company. Yeah. In 2 weeks, it will be the 1 year anniversary that I was fired from my job. In that meeting that I walked into, I was told a couple things I thought were pretty interesting. One of them being that I was a great worker, but a bad employee. And that's why we're here to support this event and getting folks to the Labor Notes conferences. We want more troublemakers, more bad employees out there. And over the years, we have won a lot of things, improved our workplace, and built a lot of camaraderie in the department that I work in and throughout the company. And as a result of that, I was off the job, but my coworkers moved on and were able to organize a petition, organize actions, organize pins like these that I'm wearing right now throughout the workplace to help win my job back. And 3 months after I got fired, I walked back onto the floor with four of my coworkers and issued a demand letter that I have a witness in my meeting. So we keep the organizing going. It's not over, and we're keep pushing forward. And I know that for me, a lot of that has been being a part of this community. When I When people ask me why I'm a member of the IWW, or why I'm a part of it, is because I know that if I get fired for organizing, they'll fight tooth and nail to get my job back. That's what I always said, and then this year it put meaning to that statement that I used to always give. And part of it is this community right here. I think some of the things that have been really important in my development has been the opportunity to meet folks in other industries, hear their stories of organizing, and learn from that. And I've had the opportunity to go to the Labor Notes Conference or the Troublemaker School in April, and have been had the opportunity to go to other parts of this country and meet other workers who are organizing. And I think if we can give more money to get more folks out there, we can only strengthen the movement here in Portland and create more bad employees.
That's Ryan from the Industrial Workers of the World here in Portland at a fundraiser for the Labor Notes Conference contingent from Portland to Chicago in April.
Another thing that I think is really important, I think the teachers are modeling it for us, is this idea of stop it. We need to stop talking about our issues in terms of this narrow special interest group and start talking about our issues in the way that they benefit the entire community. It benefits everyone to have a robust public transportation system and to have the bus and invest in the bus and invest in living wage jobs and safety for drivers. That benefits all of us. And I think the teachers, with their model of talking about fighting for the schools our students deserve, is kind of showing us the way there. I mean, clearly the Oregonian is on an agenda to drive you guys to the ground, but if more of us talk about our issues in the way that what we're fighting for intersects with what benefits the whole community, my assumption is that the mainstream media is going to pick this up because they know that it's something their readers will care about.
Yeah.
So
we've
rewritten the textbook, so labor union history is a very minimal part. Normally it's not even accurate. And this is, people are saying the kids won't be learning while you're on strike and picketing, but they are learning a very valuable lesson in history. And that's not being talked about, and it should be. Because if you eliminate the kids' ability to understand union history, you're losing a huge opportunity of a captive audience to get the true goodness of what has been done and what can be done, and showing them personally as it's going on instead of being frightened by the whole situation. So I think we should grasp that theme and really incorporate it.
You've been listening to a discussion that took place at a fundraiser for the Portland contingent to the Labor Notes Conference, led by Steve Early, labor author, journalist, and organizer. This is KBOO Portland.
I'm asking how, in addition to doing what we're doing, which is trying to build from the ground floor, how do we separate labor from its connection to the Democratic Party and to take a more independent stance?
Yeah.
Okay, well, at the risk of sounding book promotional,
okay.
There is a whole section of Save Our Unions about the experience of progressives in Vermont. Admittedly, a state on the other side of the country, a little bit smaller, but in some ways not entirely different from parts of Oregon. Over the last 30 years, under the primary influence and leadership of Bernie Sanders, now our independent socialist member of the U.S. Senate from Vermont, labor activists and community organizers, people from worker centers, have built one of the most viable third parties in the country, the Vermont Progressive Party. They now have a delegation of 7 or 8 members of the state legislature, both the House and the Senate. They have people on locally elected bodies on the Burlington City Council. The mayor of Burlington, the largest city, is not currently a Prague, but going back to Bernie's election in 1981, there have been a series of progressive mayors. And I would highly recommend that part of the book or anything else that you can find about the Vermont Progressive Party. Go to their website. They have struck me as being one of the most tactically savvy third-party organizations in the country. They're not working within the Working Families Party framework. There's no fusion voting cross-endorsement system in Vermont. They've had to be kind of strategic about how they've taken the Democrats on. And they have ended up exerting the kind of healthy pressure from the left on the Democrats that is now reflected in public policy in Vermont. It's no coincidence that the most serious effort, though still very problematic, to move towards a single-payer system or something resembling it at the state level is occurring in Vermont. Peter Shumlin, the Democratic governor, you know, nice, liberal, Democratic guy, an Obama, you know, in the making in another context. In Vermont, he has to be responsive to the single-payer movement because it was built with the assistance of an effective third party. So, you know, whether that is a reproducible model in larger states where big money plays a bigger role in electoral politics, you know, people would have to assess that for themselves. The recent success of Sister Sawant, the Seattle City Council, certainly has inspired many. And I would suggest if you look at how Vermont Progs have been doing similar electoral work over the last 20 or 25 years, there's some real lessons for people, you know, who, if they're in the labor movement, are going to have to do a certain amount of inside-outside work. You can't just walk away from the Democratic Party when you're in a public sector union. You have to relate to it, but how you relate to it really determines over time whether you're a punching bag and a slot machine for them, you know, an ATM, or a force to be reckoned with, as opposed to taken for granted, which is, I think, the current state of affairs too often nationally and locally. So,
Manson, I'm just wondering, I mean, I guess I think that just as important as democracy in the labor movement is moving our unions more to becoming social justice unions, and I wonder if the Vermont example is a good one. I'm wondering if there are other ones that you're familiar with that you take inspiration from.
Well, the jobs.
Chris Ferlasso from Jobs with Justice.
Under that brand, if you want to call it, as the Great Portland Jobs with Justice Coalition does, is a group called the Vermont Workers Center, and they really developed the single payer campaign within the framework of fighting for healthcare as a human right. And it's a slightly different approach than has been pursued in other states. And because of the different constellation of political forces there, they, you know, had more success. The Vermont Workers Center has been an important vehicle for linking the labor movement that's pretty much, at this point, public sector based in Vermont and not as big as in other states, to, you know, broader activist networks and community organizations. Like many other Jobs with Justice affiliates, really, I think, has been the best way to turn rhetoric about social justice unionism into reality by linking unions and their struggles to students, to people from faith communities, from immigrant organizations, from, you know, the broader range of the community that if unions are isolated from, they're just ripe for the pickings.
Portland State University, American Association of University Professors. We've been in a contract fight since April. We're likely to be declaring impasse this coming Friday, taking a strike vote in March. What I wanted to talk to you, though, about is one of the big challenges. Well, first of all, let me clear the record here. You may think of university professors as being pretty privileged late. We're 1,200 professors and academic professionals at PSU. And it used to be that 70% of the teaching faculty were full-time permanent. Now it's 30%. Mm-hmm. A huge portion of our faculty are what we call freeway flyers, who teach a class at PCC and one over at Mount Hood, and they arrive at PSU to try to cobble together an income, many of whom are qualified for food stamps. So the picture's changed in academia, and there's reaction to that, which is one of the reasons why, for the first time in our 35-year history, we are actually planning for a strike in April. But one of our big challenges is that, like the rest of the labor movement, especially unions in the public sector, we've hitched our wagon to the Democratic Party. We think that our survival is based on having Democratic friends in the legislature so that more money will come to higher ed. And it keeps going down and worse and worse and worse. We need to declare independence.
Yes.
Declare independence from the Democratic Party. You know, it's shameful that the United States is the only major industrial country in this world that does not have a labor party, that doesn't have a party that doesn't say we're both for the wealthy and for the poor. We're both for the landlord and for the tenant. We're both for the worker and the employee. Somebody's getting fooled. Mm-hmm. And I ask you to guess who that is. Yes. Now, the last thing I wanted to say is we could, in this room, declare ourselves the Portland Labor Party. But I'm sorry, I don't really think that's going to have traction. Because the problem is, they're entrenched, they've got the media behind them, and the working people of this city want to see if they're going to throw their weight behind something that it stands a chance. So that's why I think what we have to do is go into our existing labor organizations and carry out the hard fight to wean them away from support to the Democratic Party and build a movement within our unions for the launching of a genuine labor party based on the mass organizations of the working class in this country.
Tom, listening to a fundraiser for the Labor Notes contingent to Chicago conference, led by Steve Early, labor journalist.
I'm a troublemaker and organizer for Labor Notes and other causes, including a community activist organization called Bus Riders Unite. And I'm like Steve, I don't quite understand why you didn't talk about the Richmond Progressive Alliance, because he's involved in something in Richmond, California, which is a city-based alternative organization that started out around issues and is now thinking about running people for local office. One of the things that I would like to come back to is this issue of how we need to re-energize union members. It's clear that that's what the teachers did. That was the basis of their capacity to take a strike vote. That's something that I think the ATU really needs to do. I think other unions need to organize at the base to get, you know, like she said, an organizer for every 10 members. I'd like Steve to talk about that and why it's important. But having that infrastructure then is, what are we going to do with it? And here's where I think this idea of social justice unionism and taking on some of the big issues that affect every working class person in our city, the unions have to be in front of that. People have to understand that the union movement is a class-wide movement. It's a movement for every worker, whether they belong to a union or not. And that's where the unions really care about. And everybody thinks that, like, the UAW built itself through organizing its membership. One of the important things about the UAW, when it really grew in the 40s and early 50s, was it took on the issue of segregation. It took on racial justice. It wasn't just an organizing for its own workers, although many of its own workers were black workers, but not a majority. So it's time, and I think that having something like the Portland Progressive Alliance would be a vehicle where our unions, and this is what JD of the J really has been, we need to, I think, even go beyond that. But I'd like to hear you talk about how you organize workers, younger workers, new workers, in their workplaces, you know, like, let's make our union for ourselves, but at the same time, introduce that broader vision so that people are being recruited not just to be labor militants, but to be fighters, like Barney said, for the working class. So I'd like you to talk.
So I'm Chris Lowe. I'm an activist with Jobs with Justice, and I'm vice president of Healthcare for All Oregon, which is building an organized single-payer movement in every county of the state, every legislative district. We have an organizing strategy. It's partly based on the Vermont Workers Center idea. But I wanted to come back to what Johanna was raising and this idea. I think that if we think about, I want to say we should think about a social justice workers movement, right? Social justice unionism, community labor alliance. I have only for 1 or 2 years out of my 35 years in and out of the labor market been eligible to be a member of a union. I've been active with Jobs with Justice because I haven't had a union, right? So I think when we think about building a different kind of political force, we need to think about that kind of framework from the community as well. We got a lot of community activists who are labor activists in this room. How do we leverage that? How do we take that into the unions? How do we use that outside?
Yeah, Tom Leadham, Teamsters Local 206. I just wanted to make a comment and then sort of a pitch. Just my opinion, but in terms of changing the labor movement, I've always found that it's actually better to be, you don't have to be an officer to be a leader, But I found it's a little bit easier to make change if you actually are on the executive board or you're the president of the local. Politics, I know, you know, I remember the good old days when the Democrats took us for granted. They're working against us. And we see it more and more often. And I'd like to remind people here that starting in 2005, a good friend of mine, I don't know if she's here, Barbara Dudley, myself and a few others, got together and really pushed change in the legislature, and we got fusion voting in Oregon, a form of fusion voting. And we built a political party. We all won a labor party, but always the problem with building a labor party is that transition. You know, how do you get there? People feel like they're wasting their vote. You know, how do you nominate people that are going to be viable candidates? And we developed the Working Families Party here in Oregon in order to do that. We focus on working class economic issues. And I know a lot of people in this room are members of the Working Families Party. And we see that as that transition. Now, mostly now we're cross-nominating Democrats. We look for Republicans, don't get me wrong, but they're hard to find, and it's hard to find real progressive Democrats. But we run our own candidates. And now we have a viable party. We're just about ready. We've had so many registrants this year that we're just about ready to guarantee minor party status in the state, and we won't have to run against statewide office in order to maintain that. And, you know, so I would encourage you to look into that, because that's what we're trying to do. And Ned Burke here is the head of the Kaiser Nurses OFNHP. He's on our state committee. There are a lot of people I know that are registered here, so I just wanted to make that pitch. We're trying to address these issues and not be dependent on Democrats. We know where they're headed.
That wraps it up for this edition of Labor Radio, which is on Monday nights from 6 to 6:30 every Monday, the only program of its kind in Oregon or Southwest Washington of the working class, for the working class, and by the working class. Thanks again to our engineer, Danielle Parks. This is Jamie Partridge. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host an open house to say goodbye to our interim station manager, Victoria Stoppiello,
and to welcome our new co-managers, Monica Beamer and Mike Crenshaw.
Please come to KBOO on March 1st between noon and 4 p.m. for greeting and meeting, snacks, tours, and a general celebration of the start of our 46th year broadcasting.
KBOO is located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, a half block south of Burnside in Portland.
Again, this March 1st, noon to 4, here at your community radio station, KBOO. More information can be found at kboo.fm.
Are we asking enough regular, ordinary Black Portlanders what do they want here in the city of Portland? Listen to the word on the streets from Black Portlanders around the city give commentary about their experiences growing up in Portland or making Portland their home and building new opportunities in a two-part special programming series called Ear to the Streets of Portland, What Do the Regular Citizens Want? That's Thursday, February 20th and 27th at 7 o'clock p.m. There's a strong history when it comes to the African Americans of Portland, and hear what actions people want for changes towards prosperity, stronger communities, and what it's going to take to heal from past pains. That's Thursday, February 20th and 27th at 7 o'clock p.m. right here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. On February 1st, 2014, the Portia Project presented the 11th Annual Women in Prison Conference at Lewis and Clark Law School. The event was co-sponsored by the Oregon Justice Resource Center, the ACLU of Oregon, and Seroptimus International of Eugene. Tonight you'll hear interviews from the Women in Prison Conference. I spoke with retired law professor and founder of the Portia Project, Barbara Aldave, who spoke about her organization and the event.
This is our 11th annual conference. We were founded in 2002 and still are going strong.
Talk about the Portia Project.
The Portia Project was founded for the purpose of providing legal and other assistance to women in prison in Oregon, especially women who wanted to maintain contact with their minor children. And we do a variety of other kinds of work, too, including informing the public about the costs of incarceration, the social costs, the financial costs, and ways to reduce the problems that lead to a continually rising rates of incarceration. We have this annual conference that where people can come and learn about problems, potential solutions, about ways of serving